You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. It's great to have you here today. I'm Leanne Dolan. I live in Pasadena, California. I'm a writer. I'm a producer. I'm the youngest sister, and I'm excited to be here. How about you, Liz?
I'm Liz Dolan. I'm in Santa Monica, California. I am the middle sister. I am a podcaster and a marketer. And boy, Leanne, did we get a pile of new email into the Satellite Sisters email box this week.
That's right. I'm excited that Julie's back because we can ask her about her irrational fear. What's up, Jewel?
Hi, sisters. This is Julie Dolan. I'm the eldest sister. I live in Dallas, Texas. I'm a podcaster. And you know what my irrational fear is? I'll tell you. Storm drains. Okay. I think I'm going to get sucked into a storm drain, or specifically while I'm walking one of my grandchildren, they're going to slip down into the storm drain. So when I walk by a storm drain, I usually change that, go to the opposite side of the street. If that is not possible, I give a big wide berth around a storm drain just in case the sucking action is going on. That's my
fear. I think I feel like that's totally fine. That's completely rational. All right. We're just going to do a quick follow-up. We asked, this is the question of the week last week. And then we did get a boatload of answers, both by email and on the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. Julie, you're not alone. People have a lot of fears of just walking in general.
I know.
One woman told us that, you know, she walks daily and she said, I don't know if this is irrational or not, but I'm always afraid to find a dead body on one of my many treks.
What? Okay. What is
That's unusual. Okay. Like you, Leanne, she must be listening to a lot of true crime. That's probably true.
All right. People are very, very afraid of animals. Some make sense. Cockroaches or snakes. But other ones, how about this? I'm afraid of fish. Living, dead, doesn't matter to me. Fish.
Okay.
Another woman, completely irrational fear of frogs. Frogs, terrifying to her.
Panic attacks.
And then this one was so specific. I'm worried about Ingrid. Ingrid said, I have an irrational fear that a hummingbird flying around me will fly into my arm and its beak will get stuck in my arm with its body hanging on. Okay, Ingrid.
Okay. Long sleeves, Ingrid. That's what I say.
I make no judgment here, Ingrid, but I've never been afraid of a hummingbird. It seems like that would be easy enough to swat away, but you do you, Ingrid. These are unique to individuals.
All right. Also, there's a whole category of people on the road, things that they are afraid of. Turning left, for instance.
Yes.
Terrified of turning left. Log trucks, trash trucks, trains, cement mixers, you know, those are all like things on the road they don't want to see. A little bit like the Brinks truck here. People very afraid of parking garages. Totally understand that.
Yes.
Another, Natalie said she has, she's afraid, she has this uncontrollable urge that she's going to jump off something high and she just won't be able to stop herself. And you know what? Several other people said, driving off a mountain road.
Oh, yeah.
One woman said she won't stay in an Embassy Suites. She says an irrational because you know how they're all built around those weird,
atriums. That's what they're called, Leanne.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Julie. But it's just this idea that like everything leads to the middle, like the balconies are so easy to jump off. So that I was like, wow, irrational fear of Embassy Suites. And then this one I have to say was my favorite. Thank you, Casey. I mean, I know that's not nice. It gives you anxiety, but Casey is afraid of sock monkeys. Okay.
Well, really?
Well,
okay. She saw a scary cartoon at some point.
She doesn't know why, Liz. She doesn't know why. She said she can't stand them and she won't touch them. So there you go. Irrational fears. We love it. We have more to come on Satellite Sisters today. All right, Liz, you are going to be following a new trial for us. I'm happy for you, Liz, that you have something like this to fill your days.
Yes, it's the Sam Bankman-Fried trial starts an alien today is the first day. I'm very excited. I've done some background reading on this, of course, but I have, let's see, one, two, three things that people should know about the SBF trial that starts today.
Okay, that's the crypto guy, in case you're wondering. And then, Julie, you have a salute to three women. Don't tell us who they are now, but that's exciting. You have,
yes.
It's sort of like an international news roundup, but with women. And then you have quite a few entertaining sisters picks, Jewel.
I do. I have one that I think is, because we're all dog owners, I think you're really going to love this one. So I'll tell you about that. In fact, I'm kind of mad we didn't think of this idea ourselves. Okay.
All right. And I'm going to ask the question that's been setting the internet afire. How often do you think of the Roman Empire? Save your answers for later.
Okay.
All right, Jewel.
All right. Well, sisters, I just wanted to tell you, I was coming back from my husband's 50th high school reunion. How about that? 50 years out of high school. He went to high school in Denver. His father taught at the same school, and they had a reunion. And here's the thing that you should know about 50th high school reunions. You should go to them for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's nothing after that. Like, you fall off a cliff. You know, meaning that the schools don't organize anything beyond that, right? That's it. 50 years, right? So go to that. Number two, it's a super sweet, wonderful experience because 50 years out, you know, people aren't really trying to prove anything. They just want to see their high school friends. There's no competition. That happens at the early reunions. But at 50 years, as Lee and as you like to say, they're just happy they're there, right? They're happy they're there. Right. So we had a wonderful time at the reunion. We're heading back. We flew through Denver International Airport. We're on Concourse A trying to get back to Dallas. And lo and behold, there's a kiosk there. And it's a fix and fly kiosk. So this is not a store, but it's a little, you know, outside, just right on the concourse. And here's what they claim: 15-minute repairs of Apple products. They can do SIM cards, phone cases, charges. You get a discount if you're an airline employee or in the military. But I have a cell phone that with a cracked screensaver, you know, the cover, and a cracked phone case. And I thought, how perfect. 15 minutes? I can get this done. I'm all in. So I'm over there, and there's the most lovely girl. Her name's Wendy, okay? And I said, can you help me? I was kind of embarrassed to show her my phone. She said, oh yeah, sure. And Wendy had lovely slender fingers, and she's taking off this horrible cracked screensaver off my phone. And then she's taking out a new one. And Leanne, you know, there's not going to be any bubbles as she's putting on the new one because she's cleaning it so nicely. She is just doing such a fantastic job. I am enjoying this. And then Wendy says, well, how's your day going? You know, I said, well, thanks for asking, Wendy. And so I said, well, I was telling her about going to my husband's 50th high school reunion. And then I said, you know, Wendy, like, are you in high school? Are you in college? She was a junior in high school. She's working at the Fix and Fly kiosk, Denver Airport, young girl. Okay. I was like, well, Wendy, I went to this nice reunion. And you know what, Wendy? You can't make new old friends. I just started sisters, Liz and Leah. I just started. So I started with that. You can't make new old friends. I said, do you have any close friends? She said, oh yeah, I have a couple of girlfriends. So we went to elementary school. And Liz, that's when I said to her, you know, are these the kind of girls that were the best thing in your life you go to or the worst thing?
Wow.
She started.
You just slip right
into
the pitch.
I am in satellite sisters mode. And then Liz, I'm like, you know, Wendy, it's so good you can talk to your girlfriends because, you know, conversation can really help you navigate transitions in your life. You're going to have some of these.
Yes.
I am. And I was like, Wendy, just remember, not every conversation will change your life. Any conversation then. I had to stop, you know, because I could see she probably had a button under the Fix and Fly kiosk where, you know, the TSA can show up. But I just was preaching. I just had to preach the word. I had to get it out. Nice. I didn't want to scare Wendy. She did such a wonderful job. And if you're ever on Concourse A at DIA, I want you to go to Fix and Fly. And Wendy, if you have an Apple product, she is going to take care of you.
Wow. Okay, Julie, you're clearly getting ready for the big fun weekend. You've got on the
yes. It was too much. It just started and it just kept coming out of me. I don't know what, I couldn't stop.
Oh, that's a funny story, Julie. All right. Well, I had a week last week. It was sort of it was revelatory. Okay. So here's the deal, what happened to a lot of writers last week. And if you follow any writers on Instagram or on Facebook, you probably saw people mention this. But we have been talking, as everybody in the world has been talking, a lot about AI, artificial intelligence. And last week was the week that AI came for me. You know, I'd been sort of vaguely paying attention. I didn't want to believe that artificial intelligence was going to take my job away as a writer.
What?
So you can understand why I wasn't staring straight into the sun on this one, right? I was like, no, it's not going to be that bad. I've always got to believe that my voice is singular and, you know, that it's that there'll be work for me and there'll be a place for me and my writing, regardless of, you know, what people are using AI for. But last week, tech writer from The Atlantic, Alec Reisner, did a very deep dive on how artificial intelligence and novels go together. And here's what he wrote in his article in The Atlantic. He took a look at a small company that's pirated about 185,000 books to create a database and then sold that database to the large tech companies to create their AI generative software. Okay, so this guy, he's small, so he's pretending it's not a big deal, but he's made a ton of money taking almost 200,000 books, including mine, feeding it into the database.
He didn't pay you for those. Did he buy those?
No. I'll tell you all this. Let me just get the simple explanation out and then we'll go through like the details. So he takes the books, feeds them into the database, and then he sells the data to Facebook and Meta and Microsoft and Google, companies you've heard of and makes a lot of money. So to answer your question, no, I don't get paid for this. This is copyrighted material. So, you know, my publisher owns the copyrights to these books. So here's my first reaction was he took Elizabeth the First Wife, which is my second book. Mm-hmm. And at first I think, oh, wow, what was wrong with the other three? You know, stupidly, because you didn't like the other
three. But I can understand that.
Thief and criminal, you didn't like the other three. But then you start to think about like, wait, what? Because these books are copyrighted, you know, they don't belong to him. They don't belong to the universe. They belong actually to my publisher. So, you know, they didn't ask for permission, Julie. No, nobody gets paid. These are just pirated texts that are fed into the database to create this common artificial intelligence. So the week before, a bunch of famous authors, Stephen King, Jodi Picoult, Zadie Smith, they filed a lawsuit against this particular company and other companies like Meta, like Microsoft, because they said, hey, this is copyrighted material. You just can't use this to create your data. So they've already done the hard work. So I just thought it was like those people who operate in a different sphere of writing. But no, it's my books too. And I have to say, it really kind of shook me. Yeah, Liz, I don't want to overstate it, but you're like, are you kidding me, big tech? Like, I just...
Right. Right.
A writer out here, you know, it was Elizabeth, the First Wife that they took. That happens to be just hold a special place in my heart, that book. It took me a while to write. Like I wrote it in the middle. Some of the best parts of that book I wrote between the death of my mother and the death of my father 8 weeks later. I don't know if you remember that possible deadline I was on.
Yeah.
And it was, a story about being from a family and trying to find your place in the family. And it has Shakespeare in it. And it's set in Ashland, Oregon. And it's a romance. And then that book, like promoting that book, I literally had to start promotion of that book the week after my father's funeral. And, you know, so much of the promotion, I was with a small publisher, so you pay for yourself. And I can remember, like, literally, I had a hand truck of books and I was like schlepping them around Ashland, Oregon. you know, in the heat, trying to get stores to buy in on the book and sell it. It was just such a personal book for me. And I did love it so much. So to see that that was the one on the list that they stole, no permission, never paid me, it just really took the life out of me. And I'm like, oh. And I think it's just something that people ought to know. Big tech is coming for everyone's jobs, right? Yeah. If you work on any job that is analyzing a lot of data, say if you're a real estate appraiser, like that, you're next. You know, any job, any kind of bank employee, any kind of loan officer, anything where there's just tons of data. How about a lawyer? Like, think of all the, you know, all the legal briefs. God, goodness knows where they're getting them, but they're feeding in. Or, you know, and a scientist, imagine if they came into your office and took all your research and just put it in a big database and then sold it for a lot more money than it was worth individually. Oh, it just kind of took the life out of me, I have to say. And I feel like as a writer and as a podcaster, I somehow am in this endless, unwinnable loop with these big data companies. Because on the one hand, you know, they would have sold this technology to Microsoft. Well, guess what the industry standard for handing in your book is? It's Microsoft Word. Like you, as a, you can't protest Microsoft. Because then you can't hand in any books. Like publishers don't accept books in any other format, but Microsoft Word 12-point type, right?
So you don't really feel like you, Leon, you don't feel like you have any recourse to this.
No, you can't even do anything stupid like, oh, I'm going to quit Amazon Prime. Because guess what? Like the same week that Amazon stole my data, they were also, I was promoting the $1.99 version of Lost and Found in Paris on Kindle. Why? Yeah. Because as an author, I need them to sell a lot of $2 books because A, volume is good, and B, then those people automatically get a notice when my next book comes out. So even though that's not a lot of money, I'll make 25 cents from each one of those books sold. That's a marketing tool for me. So I just, sometimes my head spins and like, never mind. Right. We used to be with a podcast distributor that then Amazon bought. And then they were like, oh, never mind. You're not big enough for us. Goodbye. Like, it just, I feel like, how did I get in the middle of this big tech vortex? I've just been like, working.
Are you going to form a union, Leon? I think.
Well, you know, I mean, it's an author's guild, Julie. And here's the problem. It's like, we don't all have the same goals, and there's not, it would be very complicated for authors to form a union, you know, but I did sign the letter, you know, I did donate to the cause, you know, this is a, if these big authors that, you know, do make a lot of money, if they're able to win, then maybe some of the money will trickle down. I would have just liked to have been asked, because my answer would have been no. Because one thing I've learned over 20 plus years of professional writing is I don't work for free. Like, I am tired of working for free for other people. Like, remember when the Huffington Post first started and we had Arianna Huffington on and she's like, oh, that's very bloggy. Yes, oh, you should blog for me. It's so bloggy. It's so bloggy. So I had a book coming out at the time. I'm like, oh, fine. Okay. So I went through the process. I was an approved blogger on the Huffington Post. And after two posts, I was like, why am I working for free when they're getting all the ad revenue? Mm-hmm. Like, it just, it's the same reason, like TED Talks. Like, they've asked me to do a TED Talk. I'm like, I'm not working for free for TED Talks.
Leon versus big tech. I love it.
You can do it, Leon.
It's just that I'm just one little person, but I just feel like, oh, how did I get in the middle of this? Yeah. And then at the same time, I'm struggling to, you know, I'm not struggling, but I'm on track to finish my next book. But I thought, holy cow, are you kidding me? I could just put it all in the AI database that Microsoft is testing, the beta, and maybe the book could finish itself with my own words. So it feels like an endless, unwinnable loop. So all I can say is, like, what's that thing about, like, they came for my neighbors and I didn't make any, I didn't pay attention. And,
right.
Yeah. Whatever that.
And now they're coming for you. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Right.
And it's going to be somebody else. So it just feels unwinnable against these companies. And
you know, it also feels just so wrong on its face. Like, how could this be legal?
So
yeah, it feels illegal. Yeah,
like more lawsuits. I think they can't just steal your work or steal Stephen King's work. How dare they? You know?
Yeah. I mean, let's remember, like, these. I just want to say, you know, writing is a hard career, but you also have to pay lawyers to look at your contracts. You give your agent 10%. Obviously, the publishers have lawyers. Like, we all worked within the rules and paid money to create the copyrights that we thought protected our work. Like, it's not like any of this stuff is free and everybody makes a ton of money because they publish a book. That neither of those are true. So, you know, you do have a lot of time and equity and money in the game with that copyright.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay. I don't know. What do you think, you got?
I think you need to fight the good fight, Leanne.
I need to, Leanne. I think it starts here today on Satellite Sisters, okay?
Okay.
That's where it starts.
Yeah, I just don't know where the good fight goes, you know? Yeah. I don't know how you fight the big fight against a technology you're also using and need. And it feels unwinnable. But I guess speaking about it is the first thing. Just something to be aware of, you know, that they're presenting it as kind of a Robin Hood story. Like, oh, look, this little tech company, you know, created this database and is now making lots of money from Google and Meta and Amazon. Well, by stealing the work of...
I know. I think you need some of those FBI warning labels on your book, Leanne, you know, like they used to put on old VHS. We need the FBI on this, Leanne.
Nobody copied those old VHS tapes, Julie.
No.
Those totally worked.
Good. All right. I'll start there.
Leanne, I'm just going to pose a bigger question. Have you thought that maybe you could use a midlife wisdom school? Have you thought about that?
Maybe. Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
You know,
yes, Liz.
Because you aren't the only one wondering about what's next. And I bring it up because the presenting sponsor of our big fun weekend, MEA, right there on its homepage, it says navigate what's next. And I think we're all going to need to do that, right? With not just work, lives, choices, and goals and all of that. So this is just a way of thanking our sponsor, MEA, and reminding our listeners that right now you can get 20% off online workshops on cultivating purpose or on reframing retirement by using the code SISTERS. And they have both online and in-person workshops in Baja, Mexico, and Santa Fe, New Mexico, which I believe, Leanne, actually figures prominently in your new book, correct?
Yes, it does. The marriage sabbatical is set in Santa Fe. It's a special place. Yeah, beautiful place. It would be a great place to sort of work out your midlife issues, which is essentially what my character is doing. But sure. Yeah. Great.
Okay. All right. Well, if anyone wants to check it out, you go to meawisdom.com. That's meawisdom.com. I think a lot of people are in this space. It's not just you, but we're all going to have to navigate what's next. So thanks, MEA, for supporting the Big Fun Weekend.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils. I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer. And it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself.
because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SAD Sisters. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SAD Sisters at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
Okay, good news, sisters. I have a new case that I'm on. This is it. I'm back in court on the Sam Bankman-Fried case. Are you following this at all?
No, but I'm a little bit. I'm very happy that you are, Liz, because I know you're going to break it down for us. You needed a new case. I mean, the Theranos case is pretty much wrapped up.
I know.
So I'm glad you have something new that you can really sink your teeth into.
Yes. Well, you know, sooner or later, the crypto business was going to come crashing down. And Sam Bankman-Fried is the guy who made it happen. So here's one of the things you need to know going into the case. And as you hear people like me talking about it, SBF is the guy, FTX is the business. Okay. I thought those were very confusing in the beginning. So, and at one point, SBF was worth $11 billion and FTX was worth $32 billion. And it went totally broke in 4 days. So the whole crypto exchange crashed. He's now been in jail and the trial starts today. So let me just focus you on three things you're going to want to know. First of all, this is going to get juicy because three of his business partners have already pleaded guilty and will be testifying against him, including his on-again, off-again girlfriend who ran the hedge fund. So that's going to get good, don't you think? I mean,
yes.
I don't mean to be mean. Another one of the three is that the guy that he met at high school math camp. Okay, that's good, right? That's just a good detail that they've been friends since math camp. Okay, so that's number one. There are a lot of good characters in this story. Number two is the great writer Michael Lewis. You know, he wrote books like The Big Short. He wrote Moneyball. He wrote Liar's Pokers. So he's been following Sam since before the crash. And he has a book about this whole thing that's coming out today, believe it or not.
I can't wait to read that. That will be great. Perfect. Oh, yeah.
Julie, it's the first thing I did this morning when I woke up. I went to the Audible app on my phone to see if it had downloaded, and it had, because of course I had pre-ordered it. So the title of Michael Lewis's book is Going Infinite,
and fall of a new tycoon. And here's the thing about Michael Lewis is not only is he a great writer and very colorful, but you know, he's going to be doing all the news hits about this. And he just has a lovely way of talking. I just love Michael Lewis. So I think he's going to be everywhere for the next 6 months, which I'm all for.
He takes very complicated things and explains them simply. You know,
yes.
I think that's a really powerful thing. Yep.
Exactly, Julie. So my strategy throughout this is to just steal material from Michael Lewis when I bring it on to Satellite Sisters, because he will have already pre-digested.
Just give him credit, Liz. Just give him credit.
Okay,
don't steal
right.
it.
No. I mean, because Liz, I think you have that same ability to take complex issues and break them down to very simple
okay.
things. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Julie. Well, here's an example of that. Just item number three that I wanted to mention. To me, the most damning detail about this guy, SBF, you know, when they first arrested him, he was confined to his parents' home in Palo Alto, California, you know, had one of the electronic bracelets on. But while he was like under house arrest, he entertained guests and had a pickleball court installed in the yard. Okay. You cannot possibly root for this guy. This is what he's doing when he's under house arrest.
Does not seem like remorse at all.
No, it does not. So I just want you to watch for details like that, because I think it's going to give away just a complete lack of character. So we're just remember, SBF, the guy, FTX, the business. And it starts today.
Great, Liz. I know, Liz, I think you need your own theme music for this. Okay, thanks. I can't wait. Liz and Lee, and this is usually the time of the show where I do an international news roundup. And as I looked around the globe this past weekend, looking for stories to talk about on today's show, there was only really one story worldwide that came up. And I checked multiple news sources. And that is, of course, that Taylor Swift went to the Kansas City Chiefs New York Jets game to see her boyfriend, Travis Kelce, who plays tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, play. And not only did Taylor go to the game, she brought along a star-studded crew. I'm sure you've seen this. Blake Lively, Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman, Sophie Turner. Do you realize that this Sunday, 27 million people watched this show, which made it the most watched Sunday show since February's Super Bowl. Okay.
Wow.
At one point, they had 29 million people watching this show. There was a surge of 2 million female viewers. Okay.
Wow. Not surprising at all. Please ignore my fax machine ringing in the background. I don't know how that's happening.
Okay. It's SBF. He's sending you a fax, Leanne.
I thought I unplugged that 10 years ago. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, again. Anyway, of these 2 million female viewers, 53% of those were teenage girls. And NBC, they got on it right away. They cut away to Taylor's box 17 times during the game.
Yes. Okay?
Yes. People were watching it. And the NFL was trying to capitalize on it. They're sending out, they changed their Twitter X account, and it was all like Taylor Swift lyrics. Okay. So Travis Kelce's jersey spiked 400%. His podcast, Leon, went to number one on Apple. Okay.
Dude, we got to date Taylor Swift. Can't one of us date Taylor Swift?
She needs to walk around carrying a copy of your latest book, Leon. That's what we mean.
I mean, it's incredible. It's just, it's amazing. It's incredible. I want her to be happy, though. Can I say that? I mean, I would like it to be true love. I don't know if it is, but I really want Taylor to be happy. And she does seem to be enjoying just her tremendous power, doesn't
yes,
she?
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's what it's about.
It.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what's called a flex.
It was the knock.
when you can flex the NFL.
I mean, it just was the number one story.
Yeah.
Okay. She has it, Liz. She has it. It just was incredible to me that, yes, I can understand here in the U.S., you know, with sports, pop culture, drama, you know, but worldwide, people want to know about Taylor and about Travis. We just have to continue to watch it. It's going to get complicated because Taylor now has to go back out on her tour, Eras tour. And I don't know how many games we're going to plot that out and check, but we all can't wait for the next football game. Is that right? Don't you think?
Sure. Yeah. Really, I can't wait for anything that Taylor does next. Maybe she'll, you know, switch sports or start showing up with someone else. It's all good.
Okay.
People love her.
Okay. Well, the second woman you need to cheer for this week is Simone Biles, because she became the first female ever to land a Yurchenko double pike vault, which is you have to run down the mat as fast as you can, Leon. Then you have to hurl yourself into the air, and then you have to pull your body around twice while holding the pike position. Okay. No other woman has ever done this in competition. Simone Biles did it this weekend at the World Championships. She's just amazing. We have to do a shout out to her. And as you probably know, the skills in gymnastics are named for the first person to perform them at a meet. So the Yurchenko.
Oh, I did not know that. Julie, thank you.
This is very important. Yes. So now the Yurchenko double pike will be known as the Biles 2 going forward. So I want you to practice that at home. The Biles 2. You've got a big backyard, Leon. I think you could set up a little vaulting thing and get it going. Amazing.
I defy any one of us to even just hold our legs in a pike for us, for any. Never mind go up and down. Just try to pike your body for any length of time.
Okay. And then the third woman that we want to give a giant satellite sister shout out to is Dr. Catalin Carrico, that she and Dr. Drew Weissman were awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine this past week for their work, their research work on messenger RNA. And you know, this mRNA, this is the genetic script that enabled the world to get vaccines from COVID-19. And what is, have you read anything or heard Kati, as she is known, about her? Because she has an amazing background. I mean, she grew up in Hungary. She was the daughter of a butcher. She wanted to be a scientist, even though she had never met a scientist before. But that's really what she wanted to do. And she got her PhD in Hungary, but there was no money. The lab she was working in ran out of money. So she and her husband and child moved to the U.S., but she never found a permanent research academic position in the United States. I mean, she was working on grants with other faculty members, but people really thought that her research into this messenger RNA was really very unorthodox. It really was considered kind of wild and fanciful. I mean, that she couldn't get grants. She never made more than $60,000 a year working as a researcher, you know, and she would work for other scientists and then she'd be cut. At one point, she was demoted by the University of Pennsylvania. Okay. Good work, Penn. Okay. They demoted her and they gave her an office way on the outskirts of the university. I mean, she just really struggled with this and then had sort of a chance meeting with Dr. Weissman, who became her partner, at a copier machine. It was probably not working properly. Anyway, they got talking, and Dr. Weissman was working on a vaccine for HIV. And, you know, Kati, felt very strongly about her research and said that you could use this mRNA research to develop an HIV vaccine. And that's how they started to do it. But one of the other amazing things about her as a scientist is she was willing to accept a lot of failure. And this vaccine for HIV didn't work at first. It was a failure, you know, and a lot of times people would, you know, they'd move on or that's it. Or they get, no, she had so much determination. She had so much willpower that she didn't accept that as a, you know, as a failure. She just, she was a true scientist. She learned from that and they learned how to tweak it in order to make it work. And so it's just, and even when they published the information, Weissman and Dr. Carrico published their information, they had a really hard time getting it into scientific journals. Again, because it was considered sort of fringe or really—
Very fringy, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And now, I heard an interview with her, like it was an old interview that they ran last night on the radio, where she, when they announced the Nobel Prize, and she said, you know, every year my mother used to call me when they announced the Nobel Prize and said, Kati, some year you are going to win a Nobel Prize. And I would say, Mom, I don't even have a job. Or Mom, I'm sleeping in my office.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Mom, I can't get anyone to fund any of my research. And sure enough, she did it. It's an amazing story.
Yeah. So hats off to her. Thank you so much for your hard work and your perseverance. And what a role model for a true scientist in terms of what it takes, you know.
Yeah.
Well done. So Kati, Taylor and Simone, thank you very much. lifted us up this week.
Yes.
Julie, great recap. Great recap. Thank you. That was enjoyable to listen to. Yeah. Amazing. All right. This is just a tiny little story from social media that blew up to become articles in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and Vogue and Town and Country. And it stems from a TikTok about men and how often they think about the Roman Empire.
All right. What are you talking about?
So there was just a couple of guys, you know, how things take off virally. A couple of guys, it was actually a woman who said, boy, I can't believe it. My boyfriend says he thinks about the Roman Empire every day. Like something about the Roman Empire comes up in his mind every single day.
Really?
And then all the other women and men started to agree like, oh yeah, I often think about it. Oh yeah, I would say I think about it 3 or 4 times a week. And then a huge thread on Twitter, thousands and thousands of men saying, yeah, pretty much think about the Roman Empire every day. So this is fairly surprising, right? So of course, the New York Times goes to all these classicists. You know, I love it. Like, why is it just, why do men think so much about the Roman Empire? And, you know, let's face it, we get a lot of stuff from the Roman Empire in America, right? We get our governments, we get architecture, we get engineering. There's a lot of that. People love the movie Gladiator.
Gladiator, of course. Yes.
The TV show Spartacus. A lot of classicists have pointed to the idea that it was an extremely, extremely patriarchal society, and it was dominated by alpha males like Julius Caesar and Augustus, the first empire. So that sort of extreme, you know, form of masculinity appeals to a lot of men. It's certainly not because men care about history. They said that's complete nonsense. Some historians like women care about history too. It's just that these sort of popularized forms of masculinity have kind of translated down into the Roman Empire. So try it with, if there's a male in your life, try it. See how often they think about the Roman Empire. Because I have to say, I was surprised when I asked my husband and he said every day. So
really? Your husband thinks about it every day?
Yeah. Well, he's leaning towards Stoicism now, which, of course, was popularized by Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah.
So he listens to a lot of Stoicism podcasts and things like that. So he said, yeah, I guess technically every day I'm reminded of the Roman Empire and I think about it.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think about the Roman Empire a lot, but I like ancient history. And I was in Rome 5 years ago. So a lot of times I think about things. I particularly think about, like, well, how'd they get everything done? Slavery. Like when people say, how did they build this Colosseum? I'm like, well, slavery. You know, there's but isn't that crazy? So then women, they tried to figure out, social scientists, what do women think about every day? Is there a Roman Empire equivalent? And, you know, obviously it's going to vary by age and things like that. But a couple of the things that came up for women, what do they think about every day? They think about, one,
Princess Diana.
Wow.
Yeah. Ask yourself how often you think about her. Probably once a week. Once a week.
Sure.
And then the other thing women are obsessed about are their ex-best friends. Like they just they can't get over broken friendships. It's kind of that's our Roman Empire. That's our Roman Empire.
Oh, so I thought it was going to be accessories, Leanne. Accessories.
No. That could be three. Liz, maybe that's your Roman Empire is accessories. I mean, I'm sure obviously weight, looks, fashion, that's all part of it. But we're trying to sort of keep it fun. But I was thinking, like, what do I think about often in that sort of vague category? And I would say, weirdly, it was my job at the Mangy Moose. And when I was a cocktail waitress at the Mangy Moose, like, that was such a hard job. And that was such a defining 2 years of my life. I'm just surprised how often I think about it, or it comes up, or I like see an Instagram post and someone's been there. So that seems weird. But yeah,
that is weird because that was a long time ago and a relatively short time over the span of your life.
Yeah. But it was just one of that. Anybody have a Roman Empire situation going on with them?
My touchstone is always high school. Like my high school experience.
I know that about you.
And I think a lot about my time there, the experiences I had there. I find it very centering for me. Yep. That would be mine. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Liz?
Wow. Well, when you think about that, like a time period, the most formative time in my life was definitely spending my 20s in New York City. It was very formative. That era in New York City was very dramatic. The 79, 80, 81, there was a lot going down on the streets of New York and living there. It was like the ultimate test, too, of being out on your own. So I guess when you think about it that way, it would be, it would be then. I think about those years a lot. But an era in history. That's so. I do love visiting very old cities. I think I just love thinking about what life was like, 1,000 years ago. Or you walk the streets of. I'm always the few times that I've been to Rome. I'm just always shocked how amazing it is. You know,
right?
When you walk the streets of Rome or Athens, or the one time I went to Jerusalem, it was just fascinating. Or older cities in Asia that I visited.
Yes. Yeah.
So there is something about the ancient world and imagining life in the ancient world that is very captivating. I agree with that. But not so much the gladiator style.
I like gladiator sandals. I think that's a good look.
I just think for women, those places were not great. Not great.
They weren't. No.
No.
Yeah. No, they weren't great. The women, people of color. Yeah. No. And there's really, as they said, it's just an extreme form of the patriarchy there in the Roman Empire. But and so many ancient civilizations. But anyway, interesting to think about. Straight from the TikTok and Twitter. There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, I just have one quickie to add to that because it's also just something I saw in the news that I thought, really? Could that be true? But I was thinking of you guys. So this was a story about so-called marriage language, which is the term they use for what they call the weird and oftentimes embarrassing dialects people in long-term relationships develop to communicate with their partners. So just like funny words you used with each other, or the examples they used in like one couple that just always calls shrimps swimps, or one couple that always calls taking a shower, taking a shower. And apparently this is very common. I was starting to buy the premise. And then I thought, wait a minute, I can't imagine either of the two of you doing this with your husbands. But what do I know? I have no idea what goes on inside a marriage. So just quick question. Do you have a secret marriage language with your husbands?
Leo, I'll let you go first.
I think that I would say that we have some words. They're mainly words that our grandchildren have mispronounced. That we have adopted and that we now refer to them that way. There was our one grandson could not say the word petroleum, and he used to always say controlium. And so
when we're referring to controlling products, that's the way we do it. And it's always amusing to us, you know, another granddaughter who would always use the expression, yeah, sure. You know, and so we do say that to each other.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no shame in it.
I don't feel ashamed.
Families, friends, groups, they have secret languages. Barrick is just not a secret language kind of guy. I mean, a lot of times just no response is what his secret language is. When I say, would you like to do X, Y, and Z? There's just no response there. I will say most Monday mornings when I say goodbye to him, I say, remember, it's Meatless Mondays tonight. And that sort of elicits a laugh from him. That's does that count?
That totally counts.
All right. Stay with us. We're the Satellite Sisters.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. Mm-hmm. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. Do I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
Okay, we are back and we are on the verge of the big fun weekend. So we're very excited with everyone. We're communicating with everyone. You've been getting emails about what's going to be going on. You're going to be getting more final instructions in the email. I do want to say that I'm a little bit not so much worried, but I have some concerns about the activity that I planned for Saturday morning, sisters, because we gave everyone a choice. You can do nothing with us on Saturday morning, or you can do yoga with Leanne. You can do friendship bracelets with Julie, or you could walk to the Mary Tyler Moore statue with me. And we got a note from our event organizer the other day that when people responded what they were going to do, she thought maybe she might have to apply for a parade permit for the number of people that decided they wanted to walk to the Mary Tyler Moore statue. So that's going to be very fun. The more the merrier. We'll figure it out, people. You'll get instructions. But I did want to say, you know, not only are we going to have a photo op when we get to the statue, we'll figure that out. But I encourage people to bring some headgear, particularly a beret if you own one or can get one, so that we can actually have the photo op of us throwing the berets into the air.
Oh, fun.
Just want to put that out there into the world. We can do that.
And so you guys, I'm sure you're working on the finishing touches on your costumes for the Mamma Mia dance party.
Lee? Yeah, I'm headgear is what I'm working on because I think we really I have a boffo outfit, but it needs a head piece. And so those are my final touches this week that I'm working on. How about you, Leon?
Yes, I am thinking about shoes that will be, in the theme and work with the costume, but also danceable all night. So I have secured some of those. That was my A number one priority. So I think I'm in good shape. I'm also looking at some headwear, I would have to say as well. I don't want to tip my hat.
No,
but it's not a hat. But I don't want.
That's pretty funny, Leon.
Thank you. I don't want to tip my beret, but Leon and I are arriving together on the same flight from LA, and we've already agreed that we are making a stop in the Prince store that's in the Minneapolis Museum because there might be some good things to pick up there. Just again, that's why I've been thinking about accessories, sisters. Just thinking about
Minneapolis stuff. Airport, not Minneapolis Museum. Minneapolis Airport.
Minneapolis Airport. Yeah. Sorry.
The airport. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
We can't wait.
It should be really fun. Yeah. We're very, very excited. And thank goodness we have Sarah Alice as our event producer. She's done an amazing job. So that will allow us to be very excited to be there. So can't wait to see everybody. Can't wait. All right, entertaining sisters. Julie, you have a couple of recommendations.
I do. I have a book recommendation for you. It's called West with Giraffes. West with Giraffes. And this is historical fiction, okay? But it is a, not but, it, and it is a remarkable telling, a retelling of a true story. It's set in 1938, and two giraffes from Africa, they come across the Atlantic Ocean, they run into a hurricane, okay? Poor little giraffes, okay? But somehow they make it to New York, and then they do a 12-day road trip across the United States in 1938 through the Dust Bowl to end up at the San Diego Zoo. Okay, so this, it's a great story. It's got adventure in it, historic saga. It's a little coming-of-age story. There's some romance in it. It's sweet. It's simple. It's got animals in it. You'll love that. And it's not too much heavy thinking. That's what I would say. I read this on a plane. I loved it. I want to recommend it to everyone. West with Giraffes.
Okay.
By Linda Routledge. Yes. All right, thank you.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
Now, my second recommendation, and I'm kind of a little annoyed that we did not think of this, but this apparently is a big deal now. Dog TV. Have you seen this?
What is that, Jill?
This is a subscription-based service, YouTube service. And what they are doing is these are TV shows that have been developed for canines. So you know that during the pandemic, everybody got a COVID puppy, right? And now everybody was home and it was all good. But guess what? Now everybody has to go back to an office and these poor dogs, they're home alone and they're bored or they get upset. And so this is a special service that is, you know, that is developed by canine experts. And even the visuals, they're recolored so that the dogs can see the images, okay? And it's edited and scored for dogs, Leon. So these are sounds that dogs like. And it's to real, you know, that there's a lot of electronic music they use, atmospheric music. Apparently, that's what dogs like.
So no doorbells, no doorbells.
No doorbells. They're short, simple videos for dogs. Okay. And the creators of the Dog TV, they really do all the programming with thinking 80% for the dogs, 20% for the humans. And I get it's very popular because there are a lot of bored, anxious, nervous dogs. Do you think your dogs would like to watch some TV? Liz, I was kind of thinking Hooper would like this Dog TV.
I don't know. I've never seen him react to the TV in any way, unless he actually hears barking. But other than that, he doesn't seem to
But see, it's the wrong color. These are, the coloring is right for the dog. Wow. And they're little short dog videos. They have dogs on there. So dogs like dogs. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Leanne, what about Steffi? She's kind of a head case.
No.
No, she. I don't know why you say that. She's not a head case.
She has some anxiety.
She's a very nice dog.
Oh, of course she's a nice dog. No, I didn't mean it.
How's she going to see the TV? She doesn't sit on the couch. She sits in a bed. She sits in a dog bed. I'm not going to put a TV on the floor for her. No, she's a job. She's a German Shepherd. She is watching out the backyard for squirrels. That's her dog TV. That's her job.
Okay.
That's her job.
All right. Well,
would your dog watch dog TV?
No, I don't think my, okay. No. He just likes to sleep and eat. So, but I would like to know if people like it. They had a story about this in the New York Times, you know, and the author of it, you know, said that he had this service for his dog and his dog seemed to really enjoy it. So
okay. I would be very curious too, because this just really seems like a money grab for me, dog TV. So if people have found that it does calm their dog down, I would be curious to hear this. I'm very curious. All right. So Westwood Giraffe's dog TV. All right. So for me, I have become the number one Ed Sheeran fan in the last 10 days. So just want to admit that.
I love Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. You know what, Julie? I always liked Ed Sheeran, too. I thought his music was fine. He seems pleasant. Every time I've seen him, he seems like a nice, genuine person. I love seeing him on award shows. But I can't say I ever thought, oh, wow, I'm going to just listen to the, Ed Sheeran radio today. That's all I want to do is hear Ed Sheeran. I just thought, oh, this is fine. But then about 10 days ago, my son, Colin, who is also in the photography business in LA, he's an assistant, and he has been working on a series for Amazon Music. Every Thursday night, they're doing a live performance after their Thursday night football. So theoretically, you're watching Thursday night football, and then boom, it rolls right into a live performance at the Amazon stage here in Los Angeles. So Colin's been assisting a photographer and doing second camera on that. And long story short, 2 weeks ago, Ed Sheeran was the season opener, and he's the biggest star by far they're going to have. And Colin said he was just sort of in the room loading, getting gear, moving stuff around. And Ed Sheeran just walked in all by himself and walked over to him and said, "Hi, mate, I'm Ed. What's happening?" And so Colin was like,
"Oh, nice.
He seems nice. Yeah. Seems like a nice, normal guy. Hi, mate, I'm Ed." So then I started listening to more Ed Sheeran. Then he has a new album out called Autumn Variations. I have just been nonstop 10 days Ed Sheeran fan. I saw him on CBS This Morning with Gayle King do a really interesting interview with her. I listened to the Conan O'Brien podcast this week with Ed Sheeran. I'm all in. Ed Sheeran, number one fan. So I will recommend the new album, Autumn Variations. He said he created it. He thought, I'd like to create an album that, people can listen to when they're cooking in the kitchen in September.
Come away with me.
So I think he said he wrote 14 songs about 14 different friends. And I thought that was a really interesting concept for an album. And I've been listening nonstop. So there you go. Number one Ed Sheeran fan now, Liam Dolan. So thanks, Ed. Thanks, Ed.
Total conversion. Okay, that's good. Well, I know it's just about time to wrap up. So I just want to remind people that we're going to thank our Big Fun Weekend sponsors, our presenting sponsor, MEA, the world's first wisdom school. I mentioned that at the top of the show, too, if you want to check them out. It's meawisdom.com. But also, our satellite sisters, Look What I Do, listener sponsor, Kathleen Quinn. We introduced her to you last month, and she runs a practice called CFO Quinn, where she will come in and help businesses maximize cash flow and profits. Honestly, who doesn't need that? I think we all need that. And you can all meet Kathleen. She will be in Minnesota. I have links in the show notes for both of those. So we thank both MEA and Kathleen Quinn of CFO Quinn for supporting our Big Fun Weekend.
All right. Excellent, Liz. We'd like to thank Sergio Enriquez as our engineer. Thank you, Sergio. And Emily Borogine, who does our graphic design work. Thanks so much, Emily. We love working with you. That's it, Jill. We have a to-do. It's kind of a bittersweet.
Yeah, we have a special to-do.
Special to-do. a special to-do. We lost a beloved family member last week, Celeste Morningstar. She's the wife of our cousin, Joe Morningstar. And she was a wonderful mother, a grandmother. She was a ballet dancer and teacher. She had the most beautiful, wonderful, gentle spirit. And we had the great blessing to be with her in June for our family reunion. And her passing is so sad for all of us because she has been a member of our extended family for over 40 years and so dear to all of us. So we light a candle this week for Celeste. Some of our family will be there at Celeste's funeral. And we're just thinking of the whole family because we'll miss her.
We will miss her. Well. You know, when I was talking earlier about those years in New York, in my 20s in New York, Celeste was there too. Joe and Celeste were first a couple then. And I spent so much time with her and we became such good friends. I was the bridesmaid in Celeste's wedding. I just think so fondly of her and that time we had together early in our lives. And it was great to see her in June, Julie. And like, thank goodness for things like family reunions where you get to see someone you haven't seen in a while. So Celeste, we love you and you will be very missed.
Yeah, an important reminder why doing those things is so important. Mm-hmm. Amazing to see her. And we're thinking of her three children and her grandchildren and her husband and her extended family this week. All right, don't forget, call your satellite sister.